Welcome back, or good afternoon, good morning, wherever you are, whatever you're doing. I am Jim Rome. Nice to have you here. Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I had last week off. I'm back. I feel great, and we have so much to cover. Telephone number is toll-free nationwide, 1-800-636-8686. I need you to follow me on Twitter if you don't mind, at Jim Rome. You can also email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. We talked UFC 239 last hour. I couldn't even get through what I wanted to get to. So joining me right now to talk more about the event is somebody who covers MMA and boxing for Yahoo Sports. He is a winner of numerous Journalist of the Year awards. He is Kevin Ioli. Kevin, great to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. I loved your pictures from the lake in Wisconsin. Awesome.
My man. Thanks for saying that, Kevin. That was a lot of fun. I appreciate you saying it, too. All right, so you've covered a lot of fights for more than three decades, and probably tough to pinpoint one evening, but have you ever been a part of a night like Saturday night at UFC 239?
It was pretty remarkable, I'll say that, because of not just the amount of knockouts, but how violent those knockouts were. It started on the preliminary card when Song Yadong, a prospect the UFC is very high on, scored a knockout with one punch, and you're going, okay, this is a good way to get the preliminaries kicked off. And the main card was just incredible with three in a row. Jan Błachowicz broke Luke Rockhold's jaw with a left hook, ended that fight with one punch. Then you had the incredible knee by Jorge Masvidal setting a record, and then the head kick by Amanda Nunes. That was just an amazing, amazing event.
We're talking to Kevin Ioli. It was an amazing event, and before I get your thoughts further on the event, let me just go back to one thing. You had a really, really good tweet on Saturday night that started with, quote, "My first major fight that I covered was Larry Holmes against Ronaldo Mr. Snipes for the heavyweight title," end quote. Take me back. What do you remember about that night?
That was a night where Larry Holmes was almost beaten and almost lost the heavyweight championship. He got decked in the fight, and Snipes was just a guy, was not considered a threat to Larry Holmes. Holmes had proven at that point that he was a worthy successor to Muhammad Ali, and he got dropped in the fight and really had a rally. And it kind of was a precursor to what his career would be like. Larry had gotten dropped later by a number of fighters, Ernie Shavers notably, and some other guys. That was kind of the first one where we saw, hey, Larry's a little bit vulnerable, and he had to show his ability to box and come from behind. But it was crazy. My first major event was a world heavyweight title fight.
You know, I remember that, Kevin. I don't know why, but back in the day, I thought that the Mr. Snipes moniker was hilarious. That always struck me as really, really funny. Ronaldo Mr. Snipes. Maybe that's just me. Now, go back to before the Masvidal-Askren fight. What kind of expectations did you have for that matchup?
You know, honestly, I was 4-1 on the main card with my picks. That was the one I had wrong, and I had it so wrong because I picked Askren to win, and I actually turned to the person next to me before the fight, and I said, "You'll see Askren take him down in the first 30 seconds, and he'll be on top of him the entire fight until he beats him with ground and pound." So I completely had that one wrong. I just thought Askren, who's an Olympic wrestler, and he's kind of like Velcro. He just gets around you, and you can't get him off. I thought, boy, that's going to be the end of this very quickly. And instead, Masvidal had other plans. It was just a remarkable plan. And what I thought, Jim, was most amazing about it is that Mike Brown, Masvidal's coach, later after the fight put out video of Masvidal actually training that exact move 2 days before.
I mean, it really is amazing. He did train it, and it's one thing to train it. It's another to execute it the way he did. Have you ever seen a knockout like that before?
The only one that comes close that I can think of was about 2008. Jose Aldo hit Cub Swanson with one, and he kind of got him with both knees, really. He just leapt up into the air and clubbed him. But I thought this one, for the way, how quickly it went, that was fast, too. But the violence of this, and then the punches, you know. So Askren was out immediately from the knee, and Masvidal just came flying in, and he just did not like Askren whatsoever. And before referee Jason Herzog could get in there and protect Askren, Masvidal whacked him with two massive right hands as well. That was different than anything I'd seen before.
Kevin Ioli joining us. So, Kevin, where do you come out on that? I mean, what do you make of the situation? And in your opinion, should Masvidal have not thrown those punches?
Yeah, I think the classy move is to not throw those punches. I mean, you have the guy knocked out. This is a sport. This is not the streets. It's not a street fight. And so you knew you had him out. The fight was over. But, you know, this is the kind of guy, you know, everybody says Masvidal doesn't care. They said that before the fight. And, you know, he's one of those guys that, you know, he takes everything you say seriously. And Askren talked an awful lot of smack leading up, and he paid the price for it because, you know, Masvidal wasn't going to just let him off the hook. He did exactly, you know, he was within the rules because, as he said at the post-fight press conference, my job is to keep punching until the referee pushes me off. Now, because of how quickly it happened, the referee's on the other side of the cage, and, you know, that's a pretty big cage, and when you have to run over and get in there that quickly, it's difficult to prevent any punches. So, you know, Masvidal was within the rules. I think the sportsmanlike move would have been to not hit him and just kind of walk away and show your disdain for him. But, and he might have had a one-second faster knockout had he done that.
Kevin Ioli is joining us. You know, Kevin, when you had a great video of Masvidal leaving the cage, and he was shouting that Askren is a bum. That was the quote. What did you make of Masvidal's mood right after that fight and then his performance at the press conference?
The press conference was remarkable. I mean, I think, you know, he just never lost that animosity. I mean, you know, he was saying that if I saw him at Whole Foods, that I would go up to him and smack him. And, you know, he just was really fired up by the fact that, you know, he got on, for people who didn't see, you know, he got on the canvas, was beating the mat right next to Askren as Askren is out cold. I don't know exactly what reaction he thought he was going to get, but he was doing that. And I just thought that it showed the fire that he has. And he's a guy, because of that fire, you know, maybe not the physically most talented guy, but because of that fire and desire he has, and he cares so much, that he's become one of the must-watch fighters in the UFC.
You know, Kevin, it's going to be speculation, but I'm kind of curious to see where both these guys go after that. I mean, you've covered this game, you've covered combat sports long enough to know that some guys never come back after a knockout like that, either in boxing or MMA. As an example, like Jose Aldo, he hadn't lost for a decade, and then Conor beat him in 13 seconds, and now he's 3-4 in his last seven fights.
Right.
Askren had not lost in MMA until Saturday night, so how do you think he responds to a knockout like that?
Well, you know, Askren is a former Olympian. He's a competitor. He's lost before, and he's come back. But that being said, I agree with you. I mean, I thought Saturday, to a conversation I had with Ben on Tuesday of Fight Week, and he told me he didn't come back because he had retired when he was with the ONE Fighting Championship. And he told me, he says, I didn't come back because I wanted to make money or anything else. I came back because I wanted a chance to prove I'm the best in the world. After that loss, you know, it's going to be pretty difficult for him to make the argument that he's the best in the world. He's got successful businesses. He doesn't need that. You know, maybe that says to him, you know what, it's time for me to go on, run my businesses, and move on with my life. You know, I would not be shocked if he retires, but if I had a bet, I'd say he doesn't want to go out like that, and he would come back with at least one more fight.
We are talking to Kevin Ioli. Kevin, as you point out, Masvidal said, quote, this is not a beef. I just don't like my coworker. You could say, this is not a beef. This is just some idiot I don't like. My job, thank God, and some of you guys are going to be jealous of this, is I get to punch that coworker in the face. I mean, these are the types of things that Masvidal says that are just so amazing. But let me ask you, if that's not a beef, then what is that?
That is the absolute definition of a beef. I mean, and, you know, if you watched all the embedded that the UFC put out and all the stuff on Fight Week, I mean, clearly they had a beef, and Masvidal was showing up everywhere. Askren was and staring him down. And, you know, there was clearly he had these hard feelings for him. And I think, you know, he's trying to, you know, be funny, because he also said after the fight, he said, you know, I kept punching him because I thought he might get up. And I don't think anybody on God's green earth thought that Askren would move in the next 15 minutes after that. He took that knee to the face. So I think Masvidal was playing to the crowd a little bit there.
Kevin Ioli joining us. All right, now his knockout overshadowed a couple of other huge results on Saturday night. What kind of expectations did you have going into the Amanda Nunes-Holly Holm fight?
You know, I expected Amanda to win the fight, and I expected her to win it impressively. Did I expect her to head kick Holly and knock her out in the first round? No. The one thing about Holly Holm was I knew that she had a good chin. You know, she had been stopped twice in boxing, never in MMA, and she had gone, you know, the entire five rounds with Chris Cyborg. She had a good chin, and she knew how to box. So I thought Amanda's going to win the fight, but Holly's going to give her a little bit of difficulty. Holly's in unbelievable physical condition. She moves very well. She has great kicks. And so I thought, you know, it's going to take Amanda a while to land something, and I thought Amanda would pull away down the stretch and win a decision. I just did not see her knocking off kicking Holly in the head like she did in doing it. But, I mean, it shows the growth of Amanda Nunes because she watched film of Holly, she figured out a pattern there, and she picked the perfect time during the fight to throw that kick.
So, Kevin, it's amazing you and I can get this far into a conversation on a Monday after a John Jones fight, and we still haven't talked about John Jones, especially after a John Jones fight that went the distance and resulted in a split decision. So before you go, what do you make of that fight, and where is Jones as a fighter right now?
You know, I think Jones won the fight. I had it 3-2. You know, I understand people who thought Santos won, but, you know, when you really watch the fight, what was he landing? He didn't land a lot of punches. And so, you know, I think the expectations for Jones are so high, they're over the top because he's been so dominant. And Santos, hey, a year ago was knocked out at middleweight in the first round. So I think that is contributes a little bit because everybody's thinking Santos is going to get destroyed. And now when he's coming on and fighting a good fight and being competitive, you know, people are surprised. And so they kind of naturally go toward him. I think John is still an elite fighter. I think it's going to be interesting whether he decides to go to heavyweight. The one thing he said at the post-fight press conference, Jim, that, you know, kind of raised some eyebrows is he said, yes, I'll fight the winner of DC and Stipe. But then he said, light heavyweight is where I think I belong. The heavyweights hit way harder. And he goes, I have daughters to raise and a brain to take care of, and I'm not so sure I want to do that. And I found that amazing because you don't normally see top-level athletes express vulnerability the way he did in that quote.
No, I've never heard him say anything like that. I agree with you. Kevin Ioli covers MMA and boxing for Yahoo Sports. As I mentioned, he has won numerous Journalist of the Year awards. Kevin, great to have you back. Thanks for sharing your thoughts on that. I know we'll do it again soon.
Thanks, my man. I appreciate you.
You too, Kevin. Appreciate you very much. He's a great journalist. Kevin Ioli. And again, I mentioned last hour, I didn't even finish my thoughts on Masvidal and the way he conducted himself during the fight, after the fight. I've never seen a presser like that. And he was not backing off any of that. That one was deeply personal. I love his take also that that's not a beef. Well, that's not a beef. That's just me and a coworker that I don't like. But unlike the rest of you, I get to punch that coworker in the face. That was a great, great line.
You know, it's not beef. This is just, I don't like some my coworker, we could say. But this is not beef. You know, this is just some idiot I don't like, you know. But my job, thank God, you guys got to be jealous of this for me. I get to punch the coworkers I don't like in the face.
And not only that, but knee them in the head. And then when they go to sleep, keep punching them in the face. Wouldn't that be great? He's right. I mean, we are jealous of that. Let me ask you, is there a coworker? Raise a show of hands. Raise your hand if there's a coworker who's close to you that you do not like. Also by a show of hands. Would you find it enjoyable to go across the room and punch that person in the face and get paid to do it and then get interviewed by Joe Rogan after you did it? Probably be a great job. Now, keep in mind that other coworker is also good at fighting and can punch you in the face or knee you in the head or elbow you in the head. That was amazing. And again, remember, Askren was telling the same Kevin Ioli earlier in the week he was the biggest star in the UFC. Askren was undefeated in MMA. Askren, the emerging thought presented itself as, was saying, or it was said about him, that he not only is he undefeated, he can't lose. Which, of course, is a joke because I've said a million times, everybody gets beat in MMA, everybody. That's part of the reason why I love that sport. Everybody gets beat. There are so many different ways to lose, so many different disciplines. Everybody gets beat. So that was kind of ridiculous to assume that he couldn't get beat, but I certainly never saw him losing like that. All right, when we return, coming off a weekend like that with the NBA, we're talking MMA. Again, speaks to how big that is. Coming off a weekend like that, you know what we're not talking about? I hate to say it. The All-Star break for Major League Baseball. I can't get any baseball in at all, which is not good for that sport. But when we come back later on this hour, I will try and rectify that. John Morosi joins us. Hey, listen, are you finding it tougher and tougher to get to the grocery store? Let Walmart do it for you. Just make your list, set a time for free pickup or delivery, then go about your day. Walmart Associates will pick out the best items for you, including fresh produce, and they will get it ready. It's quick, it's easy, it's convenient, and satisfaction is guaranteed or you get your money back. Just download the Walmart Grocery app and get started that way. Remember, use my code Wow Fresh. Wow Fresh. That'll get $10 off the first order. It's only a $50 minimum purchase. It does not expire until December 31st, 2019, and a small fee does apply. Download the Walmart Grocery app to get started, and be sure to use my code WOWFRESH.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
So where are your clones at? I would love a telephone call. I mean, not any telephone call, but a really good telephone call. You want to hit on any of this? You want to go in a different direction? Man, get it going. Never too soon. Check that. Never too early to get that golden ticket for next year's Smack Off. Because there will be one. There will be a 26th. 1-800-636-8686. This email reads, Dear Rome, another great hit from Kevin Ioli. What a night. I don't think many people who really follow the UFC expected Jorge Masvidal to save the card with his performance in and out of the octagon. But I had hoped that you would have asked if the main event was sponsored by Tide Pods, because those dudes looked washed. But that's what makes the sport so compelling. Just as popular fighters start to fade, new ones emerge with their own unique styles. Even though the main event did in so many ways disappoint, it was still better than anything going on this weekend. Soccer? Who Kawhi Leonard is taking to the prom or something? Oh yeah, and tennis? I'm sure the weenies are frantically thumbing through their excuse-laden Rolodex. Sincerely, blaming your hangover on the earthquake. Jake Marisnik, making up a fake cryptocurrency to give his graduation gifts. Hiding the beer you brought somewhere outside the cooler so you can take it home for the 4th of July barbecue that you were invited to. And blaming the rash on that vegetarian burger patty. Wore the Masvidal Askren rematch being held in a Whole Foods store where some shopping carts just happened to be disassembled. Wore Dana White introducing the blockchain as a potential equalizer and promo opportunity for the UFC. Joaquin wearing the Masvidal Askren rematch being held in the Whole Foods where shopping carts just happened to be disassembled. They're not going to legalize equalizers, Joaquin. Again, there already are weapons in the cage. Hammer fists, knees, elbows, fists. There are no shopping carts. Alvin, can you find that quote or that cut one more time about him saying what's going to happen, that it's not over, that if they meet in a Whole Foods store. Masvidal was like, that's not over. That's not over. The fact that I kneed him in the head and put him to sleep and then punched him while he was out and then talked junk about it, still not over. If I see that guy in a Whole Foods store, it's going to happen again.
And it's not over for Ben either. He still has to deal with me. If I see him at Whole Foods, I'm going to still slap that dude up because I don't like him.
He still has to deal with me. If I see that guy in a Whole Foods store, I'm going to slap that dude up because I don't like him. Man, that's wild stuff. And again, he did that and was talking about a guy like that that was undefeated and thought to be unbeatable. How about that other quote? One more time, Alvin. It's not a beef. I mean, I don't know what you call that if that's not a beef. But Masvidal insists that's not a beef.
No, it's not beef. This is just, I don't like some, my coworker, we could say, but this is not beef. You know, this is just some idiot I don't like, you know. But my job, thank God, you guys got to be jealous of this for me. I get to punch the coworkers I don't like in the face.
Alvy's like, oh, dude, does that mean I can punch Hawk in the face and get paid for it? No, Alvy, that's not what that means. Anyway, I'm going to take his word for it. Like, it looks like a beef. But believe me, seeing this guy's act, I'm not going to argue with him. Especially him. I'll take his word for it. That's not a beef. But my advice to Askren is, Masvidal says it's not a beef. But if you're looking for actual beef, Ben, I would go to Kroger or Vons or Albertsons or Food Lion or Trader Joe's. anything but Whole Foods, because if you show up in a Whole Foods looking for the right Morningstar bacon or some fresh asparagus water, you're liable to get a flying knee to the head, because Masvidal says he's not done yet. And as we now know about Masvidal, he's not playing. You're welcome. That was like the most amazing 5 seconds ever. And the aftermath was even better than the 5 seconds during the fight.
And it's not over for Ben either. He still has to deal with me. If I see him at Whole Foods, I'm going to still slap that dude up because I don't like him.
Like, that wasn't enough for Masvidal, right? That on the biggest stage, he ended the fight quicker than any fight in UFC history with a flying knee, hit him repeatedly while he was out, talked junk about it the entire presser, and he's still not done. And it's still not over. Dear Rome, people credit Steve Ballmer and Jerry West for the meteoric rise of the Clippers. But honestly, all of the credit for the turnaround falls at the feet of the silly rabbit herself, V. Stiviano.
His silly rabbit.
His what?
His silly rabbit.
His silly rabbit?
Yes.
Is that what he calls you?
No. That's I call you... myself.
I'm still not clear on that. Is that what he calls her, or is that what she calls herself?
His silly rabbit.
His what?
His silly rabbit.
His silly rabbit?
Yes.
Is that what he calls you?
No. That's I call you... myself.
She's saying no. No, that's what I call myself. If this guy continues, if the Knicks were smart, she would be the number one free agent target on their radar. It starts at the top. Sign Preston in the ATL. Man, that was such a wonderful time. I mean, a terrible time for the association and the Clippers, but a wonderful time for the rest of us. There were daily V-Stiv updates. Yeah, I'm all about team content. I miss that silly wabbit.
His silly rabbit.
His what?
His silly rabbit.
His silly rabbit?
Yes.
Is that what he calls you?
No. That's I call myself.
Walking around in public calling herself the silly wabbit, wearing that silly visor. I miss the silly rabbit and her silly visor. Dear Jim, not going to lie. When Kawhi dragged his feet for 5 days, I was really sweating it out. Yours, Doc Rivers' face. Brett from Bugaha, dejected Lakers fan. Wore Kawhi being the first person ever to choose a new team and instantly become the most hated player in the new town. What the hell are you talking about, Brett? In fact, Brett, don't answer that. Don't email me. Ever. Doc Rivers is one of the biggest reasons why Kawhi is here. Doc Rivers is one of the biggest reasons why that Clipper culture is what it is. Doc Rivers is one of the biggest reasons why they were able to turn it around as quickly as they did after they jettisoned Blake Griffin and Chris Paul. Two guys who still haven't won the big one. Total credit to him, the GM, the owner, the organization, Lee Jenkins. I'm amazed. They're everything the Lakers are not, although the Lakers are better. The Lakers are better, and they are contenders. They're just not the team to beat, and they're not the best team in L.A. Hey, Rome. This goes back to Drew in West L.A. cracking on Wisconsin. Hey, Rome, tell Drew in West L.A. that any sane person would rather vacation in Wisconsin than go to SoCal and trip over a homeless person every 10 feet, a dirty needle every 20 feet, and suffer a 6.5 earthquake every 2 days. Caleb in Green Bay, Unwar L.A. snobs. My man, Leb. It's so true. I did miss two huge earthquakes while I was in Wisconsin, fighting off big bugs. And by the way, it was a great week. An amazing week in Wisco. When we come back, John Morosi joins us. Now, I would say to you, we're going to talk some Major League Baseball with him, and we will. But with John Morosi, you never really know, right? You can talk anything and everything with him. So stay tuned. Stick around. You'll find out what it is. Got a big-time podcast guest coming up on Wednesday. I don't want to say it because I don't want to jinx it. I would say, though, if I've done 80-plus of these things, this guy's in my top five that I've wanted to speak to, that I've been eager to speak to. In fact, top three. In fact, he might be number one. First up, though, here is your Bomb the Hour sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Tonight at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, CBS Sports Network brings you the world's true test of fitness as first-class CrossFit athletes from around the world compete at the 2019 Rogue Invitational, only on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports. We are joined right now by somebody who represents the following: MLB Network, NHL Network, Fox Sports, MLB Network Radio. A man who, as I pointed out in the past, can break down why the Upper Peninsula is, in fact, a part of Michigan. He is a friend of the program, and he can watch John across MLB Network's programming throughout the season. Plus, MLB Network has live All-Star Game coverage from Cleveland today and tomorrow. I welcome back John Morosi. John, good to have you. How are you?
Jim, I am outstanding, my friend. A great week to be an American sports fan. We had our World Cup triumph there yesterday, and then, of course, all the festivities going on in Cleveland this week.
All true, and I'm going to talk about Cleveland in just 1 minute, but every time you've done the show this year, John, we have talked about the Dodgers and what they're doing, so there's no way that we cannot do that again today. They're 60-32 at the All-Star break, and that comes after dropping three straight going into the break. So if you're Dave Roberts, how are you feeling about the first half?
I would feel excellent. Of course, the Dodgers have the best record in baseball right now, Jim. And yes, maybe a bit of a stumble late the last few games before the break, but this team almost has no weakness. I say almost because they're a club that I believe is going to look very seriously at the bullpen market in the coming weeks. Of course, we now have only one trade deadline in baseball, July 31st. That is it. And I would expect them to get the best reliever they can pair with Kenley Jansen. That could be a co-closer, ideally a left-hander, potentially Felipe Vasquez, who's now an All-Star as well this week. I would watch him carefully. Will Smith of the Giants, potentially even a trade between those two great rivals, which by the way, has not happened since 2007, a Dodger-Giant trade. But this team, Jim, you look at the way that they've had the bullpen, I think, at times be a weakness for them in the last two World Series. When you've got a team that's this good, this talented, that's made it to the World Series in back-to-back years, you simply cannot afford for your season to end short of a championship because the bullpen is not deep enough. You know it's a weakness. I expect for that reason, Andrew Friedman's going to be very aggressive in addressing that with a trade here in the coming weeks.
John Morosi joining us. All right, you broke that down for me. I don't even need to follow. What about the Astros? They're 57-33. They're talking about adding pitching. Where are they looking, John, and what does that tell you about their motivation to win this year?
Well, Jim, it's really interesting because this is a team that, of course, they've got multiple all-star pitchers right now. Justin Verlander, who's going to start the game, Gerrit Cole, and Ryan Pressly, who's really emerged as a great reliever. But Gerrit Cole is going to be the preeminent free agent pitcher this winter. And when you look at their rotation, Verlander, Cole, Wade Miley, they have, I believe, a very strong need for a starting pitcher to fill in that third or fourth spot, depending on how high the acquisition ends up being. And it's my belief, Jim, they're going to pursue players they would control beyond the end of this year because you think about Gerrit Cole, free agent after this year, Wade Miley, also a free agent, Colin McHugh, a free agent, and they've had some of their young prospects, especially Corbin Martin, who just had Tommy John surgery, Forrest Whitley. They have not really emerged in a way that you would expect. So those names, I believe, that the multi-year control pitchers, Marcus Stroman in Toronto, Matthew Boyd in Detroit, and potentially the Texas native himself, Noah Syndergaard with the Mets. Now, the Mets, as you know, Jim, they're in a bit of a state of disarray right now. I'm not sure if they're almost in the headspace to make a trade like that because there's been so much turmoil there. But if they do decide to go that route, I do think the Mets and Astros would pair up very well on a trade for Noah Syndergaard.
We are talking to John Morosi. That'd be really interesting. Now, the Yankees are thought to be interested in pitching as well, John, and the name Madison Bumgarner has come up quite a bit, or at least did back in June. Where do things stand with that right now, and how do you think he would fit New York?
Well, it's a great question, Jim, and I think that there is still some dialogue, some contact
between the Giants and the Yankees about the possibility of a Bumgarner trade. I don't get the sense that things are terribly close right now or that they're really gaining momentum at the moment. I actually happen to think, Jim, there's a better chance that Bumgarner goes to a National League club, like potentially the Brewers, maybe the Braves, who I think would have a very good chance to sign him long-term because, of course, he's from North Carolina and would really welcome the chance to be there and pitch close to home. So I think for the Yankees, Jim, he's one of many possibilities. I think Stroman and Boyd are fits there as well, potentially, because they know they've got to replace C.C. Sabathia after this year as well. So getting someone who you have control of, I think, would have a great deal of appeal. Of course, Madison Bumgarner is just a rental for this year alone. I look most especially, Jim, at the great number of left-handed hitters for the Dodgers, for the Brewers. Those are teams that are very left-handed heavy. And if you're a team, for example, if you are the Brewers, then you know that you have to find a way to get through the Dodgers. It really helps to have that dominant lefty starter, if you could possibly have one, because you want to have a lefty to go up against the likes of Bellinger and Muncy and Peterson, all names we're going to see in Cleveland this week. So I think for me, Bumgarner is a better fit in the National League, and it's all about, for me, how a National League team, and the one that's probably the next best club in that league is probably the Braves right now, how can the NL clubs control the Dodgers' powerful left-handed hitters in the month of October? You've got to prepare for that right now in the coming weeks and make that big trade. You have to make an October trade in July here before July 31st.
Right, and given his history against LA, I'm sure the Dodgers would be happy to see him leave the National League altogether. John Morosi is my guest. Now, John, the All-Star game, as we're talking about, is in Cleveland tomorrow night. The thought had been a few weeks back that Cleveland was going to be a selling club, but they've won six in a row, and they've got the second wild card spot as we speak. How do you think they'll approach the next few weeks?
Well, Jim, it's a great topic around baseball, and so I'm glad you asked about it. I mean, it's been hotly debated for a long time, but as you point out, with the way they've played of late and the fact that you've got three still rebuilding clubs in your division in the American League Central, I believe will help the Indians have a higher record than you might expect, because they'll be able to match up against the likes of the Royals and the White Sox and the Tigers over the last couple months of the season. And that will give them an advantage in relative terms to the AL East clubs, for example, who have to deal with two really good contenders because you've got three effective contenders. They're all playing each other. And even out west, the Angels have played better of late, the Rangers as well, joining the Astros and the A's, of course. So that's a very competitive division. And I think in some ways the Indians will benefit from the rebuilding nature of their divisional competition because of the unbalanced schedule. I think right now the most likely scenario, Jim, is that they hold. I don't see them buying aggressively, but I also think that it would be a little odd, I think, for them to trade the likes of Carlos Santana and Brad Hand right now and make those moves at this point in time, given how well they've played. So I think they're a club that's going to hold. Maybe they make a small move around the margins, but I'd be surprised if they did a wholesale moving out of pieces, because they are competitive, and as you point out, if the playoffs began today, they'd be in it. Very hard to be a seller under those circumstances.
John Morosi is joining us. He's all over the festivities in Cleveland for the All-Star game. John, you mentioned the Angels, and of course the league was rocked last week with the news of the passing of Angels pitcher Tyler Skaggs. For those who did not know Skaggs, what was he like as a player and as a person?
Well, Jim, he was an amazing light for that organization and for the game as well. I remember a number of years ago I had a chance to talk to him in spring training, and he is one of the unique people who, after talking to him for 10 minutes, you felt as though you'd known him for 10 years. And he just told stories so easily. And speaking with Brad Ausmus, I saw the Angels over the weekend in Houston, and Brad was talking about how he was the one who controlled the clubhouse sound system after a win. He would be the DJ that spun the best music and got everybody in a great mood. So that's why it's so emotional to spend time, as I did around the Angels over the weekend, because they go between the incredible pain of losing a close friend at such a terribly young age, and then they would also want to share with a smile their memories of what an incredible person he was. So there's a remarkably large void right now in the sport, and certainly for the Angels, and I know the thoughts and prayers of the whole sport have been with them and will continue to be, because whenever you talk to a player, whether it's in this clubhouse or those who have gone through similar tragedies in the past, I'll tell you that, especially in a tight-knit atmosphere of a clubhouse, there is no straight line improvement in terms of the grieving process. It's going to be a process. You're going to have to lean on your counselors and the people around you to help you through it. And I think the first home game back for them, Jim, will be a challenge on Friday in Anaheim, but they've got a whole world of support behind them and some incredible families that are around the players that are helping them through it as well, because it's a very difficult time right now for the Angels, but they're doing a great job, I think, of representing their friend's memory and his passion for life, his spirit for the game, in the way they've played here over the past week.
Well said. John Morosi joining us. I don't think you ever get over something like that. I think you just hope to get beyond it. And then before tomorrow night's game, John, in Cleveland, the All-Star game, the league is going to honor CeCe Sabathia for his contributions to the game and to the community. What has he meant to the game, and how special will that moment be tomorrow night?
It's going to be extraordinary, Jim, and I think that that moment, and of course Michael Brantley getting a nice ovation, a huge hand, I'm sure, coming back to Cleveland, will be powerful as well as an All-Star for the American League. But CeCe Sabathia, I always, a couple stories to me stand out. Number one, we talk about the difficulty of going to the big markets and living up to the hype and the expectations when you're a superstar. CeCe has done that for a decade. And the respect that he garners just in the way that he treats people, the Boys and Girls Club, the time he's given there, how involved he's always been in the community, whether it's back where he grew up in California or in New York and New Jersey, where he has lived and worked for a decade, he is revered. Teammates respect him, and opponents respect him. I know from just talking to people in both of those categories, he is one of the most respected people in uniform, out of uniform, anywhere in the game. And you think about his very first year, he goes to the Yankees. They win a World Series back in 2009. The year previous to that, when he was a free agent to be, all the expectations, you think about how nowadays you want to make sure you preserve your market value and keep your arm healthy. He was pitching on 3 days rest for about the last 6 weeks of the season in Milwaukee. That earns him so much credit. So just a really respected veteran, always accessible to us, easy with a smile, easy with his support for teammates. You're going to see, I think, as the crowd cheers for CeCe, of course, being a former Cleveland Indian, you're going to see all of his peers in the major leagues react in the very same way, because there are in all the years I've covered the game, Jim, I cannot think of a player who is more widely respected than CeCe Sabathia.
You know, he is beloved. He is revered. John Morosi, same thing would be said about you, John. You are beloved and revered. You can watch him across MLB Network's programming throughout the season. Plus, MLB Network has live All-Star Game coverage from Cleveland today and tomorrow. John, great to have you back. Thanks for breaking that down. Always good to talk to you.
Jim, my pleasure. Thanks as always for the kind words, my friend. I feel the same way about you. I always love listening to your show, and so it's a great honor anytime I am on it. So all the best to you and your family, and look forward to catching up again soon.
You too, John. You always make this show much better. Thank you very much. John Morosi, working for MLB Network, NHL Network, Fox Sports, MLB Network Radio, and a good friend of the program. So that sets up hour number three. It's my first week back after a week off. And we've got an open phone third hour. I've done all three of the interviews that I was looking to do. Now I want to hear from you. 1-800-636-8686. Now I'm going to set it up as an open phone hour. If the calls are there, great. If not, I've got a lot more content I want to get to, including NBA free agency. I told you what I thought about the Clippers. I want to get into the Lakers. I want to talk about where that leaves all the other contenders. And the fact of the matter is, because Kawhi Leonard did not go to the LA Lakers. And you know what? Honestly, pretty much nobody wanted that to happen who's not a Laker fan, right? Because it sets up the entire thing. The NBA is wide open right now. I could argue for 8, 9, maybe 10 teams having a deep possible run in the postseason. So that's good. If you're NBA parity guy, you're loving it. Not parity guy, Larry. I'm not talking to you. Parity. So all of that coming up. Remember when I said I was going on vacation, not necessarily get away from you clones? Well, to get away from you clones. And I ran into a number of you clones in Wisconsin. But I was doing it to get away from the Mets. The Mets are the rare train wreck that not only jumped the day or the weekend, but the entire vacation. That's coming up also. Stay tuned.